Resonance Rewind.
With Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Eloise Sheehan, Jenny Bill.
And every so often, some delightful guests from the cosmos. Ooh.
You're tired. You're irresistibly tired. Your eyelids are heavy. You must sleep. Maybe it's a thought that's just popped into your head. Or maybe it's another edition of Resonance Rewind. The iconic Laurie Johnson Orchestra there with the iconic theme to the original and some might say best version of the Avengers, which has brought us around to our own dynamic foursome of critiquers as far as this particular episode is concerned. Too many Christmas trees and a non-socially distanced Christmas party, all set in the wonderful world of 1965 Spidem and Men Who Stare at Goats and other scenarios as well. We welcome to Resonance Rewind, of course, Jenny from Norway. How are you, Jenny?
I'm fine. Good evening. Thank you.
Very nice. We have, of course, Robin Pierce from Wales, newly based Wales with more severe lockdown measures in force for the festive period or just after.
New and improved as well.
New and improved. And looking with us from some sort of wry perspective on, wasn't it a lot simpler when the Avengers was just Emma Peel and John Steed actually taking on the evildoers of the world as opposed to Captain America and all the rest of the Avengers? It's Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
I'm all right. I just realized that I have my cardigan on backwards, so I'm doing okay.
Jessica, I thought it was a style statement. Honestly, I wouldn't notice. And actually, sometimes, you know, the beauty of radio is nobody really knows. We always wear our clothes backwards. It prevents hexing and other things. And it's one way of actually coping with mind control and so on. So I won't go into a rendition of the Grand Old Duke of York. He had 10,000 men. He marched them up to the top of the hill and he marched them down again because I don't want anybody to control my mind. But Robin, would you like to do a little précis of this particular episode, which of course has a lot of wonderful legacy, both in front of it and behind it, directed of course by Roy Ward Baker from Hammer Horror and a whole stack of other things, and Tony Williamson, a guru of British telefantasy, if ever there was one. Over to you, Robin.
Well, the Avengers. As you say, not a Captain America, Iron Man, or Thor in sight. These are the British super spies, perhaps the most stylish spies that Britain ever churned out. They were usually John Steed and, three mainly in the original run, female assistants. Kathy Gale, played by Honor Blackman, Diana Rigg then went on to play Emma Peel, and of course Linda Thorson as Tara King. Well, in this episode, we're getting towards Christmas, and Super Agent Gentleman Agent, even John Steed, played by Patrick McNee, is having a recurring nightmare where he's running into what appears to be almost a department store sort of Christmas play of its 1964 era. He encounters a sack full of gifts and perhaps the most sinister looking Father Christmas I think I've ever seen. I think it's worth noting that this was shown in 64. When I was watching The Avengers, the odd ones that I saw back then, it always freaked me out. I always thought it was more horror than spy, but I haven't seen any of the original run since then. And in seeing these, it's still as horrifying as ever. Anyway, Steed is having these awful nightmares, confides about what he's seeing to Emma Peel, who has had a party invitation. She goes along with Steed as a guest to the party, and everything starts playing out in real life. What is going on? Well, I feel sure that we're going to find out as this episode unfolds. Over to you, Alex.
It was actually released, a minor caveat was it was released on the 22nd of December 1965 when ABC actually first aired it in Britain, so very timely there. And the United States, being as ever ahead of the game, actually aired it on August the 11th, 1966, when obviously that's the best time to actually air one of those wonderful festive-oriented British episodes, which is great. So let's turn to the United States and go to Jessica. What did you make of what I presume was your first ever episode of this telefantasy series of the 60s?
I really enjoyed it, actually. I think I was a little tired the first time I watched it because I fell asleep. So the hypnosis really worked in the show. but I had a lot of fun with it. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. Jenny, let's turn to your good self, of course. I mean, with a classic line such as, Mrs. Gale, what can she be doing in Fort Knox? When, of course, the cards are being opened, a lovely little intertextual reference there to Honor Blackman, who, of course, was portraying Pussy Galore in Goldfinger at the time. Jenny?
I saw, like Robin, I saw the series originally in the 60s when I was a little girl. And the same thing, I didn't really like them. And I think I, a little bit like Doctor Who, I found them really scary when I was very young. And then you look back now and think, well, you know, how was I scared? And the other thing that struck me when I watched it this week was how British, how awfully British it is. I don't know what Jessica thinks about that, but it was just, it sort of portrayed this ideal that people have of British, post-war British people, you know, the whole thing. But yes, I really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I actually thought the plot was a little flimsy, but the whole thing was just so well done. It was really enjoyable from start to finish.
There's clearly the notion of I'm not going to leave until I separate you from 50 guineas. Might have been confusing for somebody not familiar with pre-decimalisation currency. But Jessica, guineas is basically a pound and a shilling, basically, which you still actually use. You still need to use guineas if you wish to purchase horses. Because if you come to Britain and expect to buy some horses, they will still be sold to you in terms of guineas.
What is a shilling?
What is a shilling? 5p, the equivalent to 5p, or 5 cents would have been a shilling.
5 cents. Okay.
It's quite all right, Jessica. I had a group of people today. I actually asked them, because we're coming to the end of a histories of journalism session, and I said, how many people here pre-decimalisation could actually tell me how many pennies were in the old English pound? And nobody realised it was 240 pence to the pound. Maybe we'll go back to that. Who knows? Robin, in terms of characterization, I mean, some wonderful classic British actors who, of course,
oh my goodness, yes,
across the base, really. What did you make of Felix Teasel, for instance? And of course, the main man, Brandon Stories.
Well, Brandon Stories, I have always wanted to see the original black and white Christmas Carol, but I've been unable to get it on DVD. My son found it somewhere for me, and we watched it last week. And of course, in that, it's the same actor who plays the gentleman with the Dickensian sort of obsession, who plays Bob Marley. No, Bob Marley, Bob Cratchit. And of course, Patrick McNee plays the ghost of Jacob, or young Jacob Marley in that film. So there was that interesting connection. I absolutely loved the Kathy Gale line which you quoted, because of course that the whole plot of the Bond movie Goldfinger involves making radioactive the entire bullion contents of Fort Knox. The characterizations, as I recall, and I may have this wrong, the Avengers, unlike Simon Templar, would never travel abroad in the 60s.
Goodness, no, there were sufficient masterminds, et cetera, in Britain. You didn't have to travel abroad for that kind of thing. Good heavens.
And you had Patrick McNee as the quintessential English gentleman, you know, back in perhaps Edwardian times, I think. You know, he was obviously a man out of his time. And in watching this episode, I also checked out some of the background of the series. And in an interview, one of the showrunners had mentioned, you know, if they have John Steed, for example, in an airport, he would always be by himself. And the reason he would be by himself was not because they couldn't afford extras. It was because if you put him with a crowd, he would stand out like a sore thumb. And the only way to make him anonymous was literally to have him by himself. In fact, I enjoyed this so much, I put my pennies down for the next episode along on the streaming service, which was something that I did remember from my childhood, Cybernaut. And I, even though they don't scare me now, obviously, I can see why they would scare me back then. And the Cybernauts were amazing. This Christmas episode was amazing. I can see why little Robin was well freaked out at age of 5, 6. So, yeah. Characterizations spot on. And who knew that Great Britain had so many mad scientists?
Well, let's not spoil the rest of the series. And I eased away from the Cybernauts because I felt we need to be a bit festive. This was one of those rare Avengers episodes which did focus on festivities. Mervyn Johns, of course, was the actor who portrayed Brandon Story, also known, of course, as being the lead character in Dead of Night, another classic horror story and black and white story from the immediate post-war years. Jessica, back to yourself again. In terms of the characterizations that we saw, and obviously every British home actually has that kind of Christmas party with the opulence to actually have a room dedicated to Great Expectations. That's what happens when you're a successful publisher, clearly. And giant-sized Christmas presents and all of those sort of factors. How did you find the characterization? And in particular, the character of Emma Peel, of course, Diana Rigg, the accomplice, in an era which many people said, but what about Emma Peel? Surely she's actually helping Women's Lib. And one of the criticisms was, well, it's just a fantasy. And so she's not really real. But at the same time, I think for a Yorkshire actress, Dame Diana Rigg, of course, before she passed away, certainly managed to kick butt in all sorts of ways. And doing that wonderful backward sort of kickstart, which actually took out Professor Teasel, amazing. But what did you make of Emma Peel?
I really liked her. I think that she was a very active heroine compared to some of the other female characters we've seen in shows that even came a bit later in different shows from the 80s and 70s. But I love the banter between the two main characters, especially at the beginning when, you know, they were going through the different Christmas cards from all of his admirers. And I thought that, you know, their attitudes were perfect in contrast to each other. I thought it was fun. I don't know. Each character stood out individually, and that was what I really liked. Oh.
Jenny, what about yourself? I mean, I always sense that obviously with your ice skating, you could channel some of the Emma Peel characterization at all. Or are you more Tara King, or were you Kathy Gale?
I think I might be a bit of Kathy Gale, but I do think, having seen all the three, I never really liked the Tara King character. And I certainly think that the Emma Peel pairing with John Steed was by far the most successful and had the most chemistry to me of all the sort of three lots of series with the different co-star ladies.
Of course, omitting Joanna Lumley in the new Avengers, in many ways, arguably she's also part of the whole thing. And the fact that there have actually been three actors who've portrayed both John Steed and Emma Peel in various incarnations, because there was, of course, the movie with Uma Thurman and Ralph Fiennes in the late 90s. I can tell you, we might have a look at that sometime. And in addition to that, of course, we've had the Big Finish audio dramas in which they are portrayed by Julian Wadham as John Steed and Olivia Poulet as Emma Peel. So I think the characters are emerging. But as I like to say, and indeed quoting from Steed, the quality of a lady's performance is not measured by her years. What a way to actually endorse the green, as we would see when the Avengers went into colour, the green 1929 Bentley. That was one of the slight sort of confusions I had about the whole episode. I can go with the mind control. I can go with the Cold War aspects of psychoanalysis, the Freudian subtext, all of the elements that come there. But why, when they'd obviously driven two random stories, why did they actually leave in a horse and cart? I don't know. It's just a big, bizarre sort of plot thing that sort of still confuses me from that point of view. Robin, in terms of dynamism, we've heard obviously about Emma Peel and that interrelationship. What about Jeanette Stark's character of Janice, the psychic, of course? Did you feel that also kind of managed to touch base in terms of how she was being portrayed? Janice Crane, of course.
I felt in many ways that she was just a pawn. And I wasn't sure that she knew she was part of the plot, her character now. So she was, to my mind, kind of an innocent drawn into this as a genuine psychic, not realizing that they were trying to find out what was really going on, secrets-wise, in the magnificent cranium of John Steed. Oh. So it was a convoluted plot, but I thought it worked very, very successfully.
Well, if you add to that, of course, in the early part of the whole sequence, the notion of caviar, quail's eggs, asparagus, and a bottle of champagne that could be opened. I mean, what human being wouldn't actually like their associate or friends to actually provide them with that kind of initial offering for a Christmas scenario?
Well, I can see Jessica. I don't think I could actually eat any of that.
No.
Too rich, obviously.
A bit too rich. No. And, you know, quail's eggs, are they cooked or are they raw? I mean, you're eating fish eggs and quail eggs. No.
let's not at least say, at least they didn't have scotch eggs, which would have been another routine, although it could have been
justified. I could eat a scotch egg. A substantial meal.
Exactly. But as I said, Robin, an embryo clad in meat. But there we are. That's another line entirely. Who is Buffon?
I'd successfully forgotten that. Thank you.
Who is Buffon's, of course, one of those unanswered questions that we actually got. Turn to you again, Jessica. In terms of the atmosphere, obviously watching this in black and white, did you feel that added to it? I mean, as I mentioned, because of the American market, ABC, for the season after this, proudly actually announced the series as The Avengers in Color, C-O-L-O-R, which, again, echoed a whole range of other elements within that. So, I mean, how did you feel, and again, as an American, did you feel that this actually... Is this still an aspect of British culture that you think, actually, that's what Britain should be? Were you disappointed? I cite this as finally. I once knew a wonderful doctor who'd been born in Hong Kong, who'd emerged in Hong Kong, did his training in Hong Kong, came over here. I took him on a location report with us to Burley House in Lincolnshire. And he actually said to me that actually when he first came to Britain, he'd expected every house to be like Burley House and was most disappointed when he ended up in Leeds. Anyway, that's for Dr. Jim, if you're ever out there. I know you're working plastic surgery now in London, but what the hey, that's for you. Jessica, what about yourself?
I do think that it kind of has that stereotypical kind of British look to it. Like Jenny was saying, it kind of, you know, I think for an American audience, that's what they would expect to see from Britain. I think that they would kind of idealize it. And I think having it be in black and white makes it look even more like, you know, not vintage, but almost like extremely classy in a certain way. And I'm not sure if it would have been different at the time due to how it was more normal back then. But to me, it just made me think of all the old detective shows, you know, that are like the ones from so long ago that inspired all the famous shows today. So, and I think, I don't know, things like the car, the when they were driving down the street and she had like the bonnet on and, you know, everything was just very fancy and elegant. And I think an American audience would have been very excited to see those kinds of things.
has to be said, looked at from a contemporary perspective, not a great deal of diversity in the cast, but interesting sort of gender differences from that. Security, Intelligence, Psychiatric Division, or SIPTI, one of the sort of interesting ones. A rare example of an Avengers agency that didn't actually employ a strange acronym, but life was good from that point of view. Was anybody again thrown by the character of Dr. Felix Teasel? Who actually, just in the name itself, sounds Dickensian. Dr. Felix Teasel. I mean, Robin, did you feel did you think he was a bad guy? Initially, I thought he was a bad guy, but he obviously was a good guy.
I thought he was a bad guy, and interestingly enough, like you, I thought, what a Dickensian-sounding name. This is all the trappings of, you know, something like a Christmas Carol about it. I was a little bit confused because when Emma Peel turned up in fancy dress, she was Oliver Twist, wasn't she?
Transgender, transgender diversity, good to see.
Yeah, but I thought it would have worked better as Tiny Tim. She should have had a crutch.
But then she couldn't have actually engaged in her action sequences from that point of view.
She could have used it as a kendo stick.
How about the other characters? And let's turn to Jenny for this. I mean, Jeremy Wade, Martin Trasker, of course, clearly all part of this group of psychics who are kind of impressing their thoughts. And as I say, the historical perspective of this, the CIA were engaged, as indeed were the KGB, regularly during the 1950s with a range of assignments to explore the power of the mind, how you can actually, again, in the movie The Men Who Stare at Goats, how you can actually sort of execute just using the psychic powers. How did you feel they were portrayed?
I thought that they were portrayed quite well. I thought that they, I can't say hammed it up, but I think they just had the right amount of sort of mystery and suspense without being over the top and rather obvious. I did think that, to me, the lady psychic was like a weaker character. I thought she had a weaker character than the ones that were the other psychic, the other three psychics, and also the Dr. Teasel, who I thought from the beginning, I thought, oh, he's a bit of a red herring because you already knew, you could already work out who the four psychics were that you'd seen, that there was four places at the table. And I thought, he's some sort of a red herring and he'll probably turn out to be from some, you know, private bureau, which he sort of did. But so, yes,
of course.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, the other thing is that it does actually echo the notion of the country house domestic murder scenario, the murder mystery that's actually there. Although we don't actually see a murder committed here. We'd seen the murder occur before it occurred. And obviously it was a murder caused by a brainstorm, quite literally, or a brain hemorrhage, one might well say, which of course was...
Did that Father Christmas with the ill-fitting mask that made him look like he didn't have any eyes freak anybody else out? Or was it just me? That was just grotesque. And black and white added so much to that, I thought.
Yes, Jessica, were you actually equally frightened by the bizarre incarnation of Kris Kringle here?
I question anyone who wasn't absolutely horrified by that. It looked something straight out of like Krampus, and I was thoroughly freaked out.
Yeah, Jenny, you must be living in Norway, you see. You're home to too many Christmas trees in Norway, including the one that usually ends up in Trafalgar Square. Yeah. So that's the reason why I just thought it's a standard thing. Or maybe that's what all Norwegians look like.
I don't know any Norwegians. It's living a lifetime in London. You see everything there.
The French, of course, also loved the series excessively, to the extent that they retitled it Chapeau Melon et Boîte de Coeur. And in this particular episode, which was entitled Fête de Beurève, I'm quoting this actually from the official French version of the Avengers Too Many Christmas Trees aspect. Curious, I've always sort of wondered, and of course they co-founded the new Avengers. I mean, Robin, did you think this is something which, not only for the American market, but actually the French love Le Rustbif and Le Mepil and so on in terms of their sort of take on the Avengers?
Well, I'm not surprised because Emma Peel played it in a very European way, didn't she? I mean, the French, for example, were far more advanced of us, I feel, in equality and women's liberation, which is big at the time. And Emma Peel was a very, very strong female character, as was her predecessor, Kathy Gale, played, as we said, by Honor Blackman. And I think that of its time that would possibly appeal to the French even more than it would appeal to the British, because, you know, there was no such thing as woke at that time. This is pre-woke, and you know, the sort of strong female character for all these people throw their hands up and say, oh my goodness, Doctor Who is the best, strongest female character we've ever seen. Yeah, take a look at the Avengers, then tell me Doctor Who is the strongest character we've seen on TV.
Yes, I think I would agree with respect to that, Robin, and that's hopefully a part of the essence of Resonance Rewind, that we sometimes review this. And of course, the Women's Liberation Movement didn't really actively start until 5 years after this series was actually aired in terms
which
of
makes it even
so.
More ahead of its time.
So, apart from the fact that where is your 4-0 green grow, the rushes grow, which I think is wonderful, you know, just as a line from that. I mean, what's your favourite aspect and scene from the sequence? Let's go to Jenny first for this.
What's my favourite scene from the...
Yes.
From...
Was it the seance? Was it the psychic test of John Steed that was broken only by the dropping of the glass by Emma Peel? Was it the sharpness of the characters? Yeah. Was it indeed the sort of battle scenes? Or was it, in fact, to me, one of the weakest characters was actually Jeremy, because I thought Jeremy Wade actually ended up a bit like we'd expected to be, effectively dead, portraying a character from Great Expectations who effectively never married and was just left in a room with mice effectively eating the wedding cake and lots of cobwebs.
My favourite scene was the scene where Emma Peel came into Steed's house and she made the tea, and they had the tea out of the very typical British old-style teacups, and they were opening the cards. And I actually was quite interested to see all the things in the room, and the little bit of the hallway that you saw, because it had so many interesting things to see that were really sort of from British history, really, because it is... The programme is quite old. I mean, it is like 50-odd years old anyway, and I think it looked like it was set even longer ago than that, the style of it.
I mean, sadly, this year we lost Diana Rigg, as we mentioned. Patrick McNee passed away a few years ago. You could argue that in many ways, again, the popularity of British culture, you have John Steed, James Bond... they all have the same number of letters in their names. There is that sense of John Steed being a sort of reliable mountain line that works through that. Of course, it's fair to say John Steed, not as much as a womanizer as Bond, although it was noted that he did make a beeline for the female in the party to actually say, oh, new friends. And indeed, had already managed to get her number written down within a matter of moments. So that's effectively quick movement from that point of view. Robin, your favourite scenes?
My favourite scenes, the opening of the Christmas cards, because as a trivia nut, I absolutely love the throwaway
line. A little yelp of joy when you actually had that reference to Mrs. Yes. Gale. What can she be doing in Fort Knox?
I actually paused it and explained it all to Steve, even though he never asked me to. And I think my other favourite scene was actually when you thought everything was as bad as it could get, and Steve just looked Emma Peel right in the eye and told her that he's been onto them all along. And I thought, ah, yes.
And of course, without which no spy or indeed current undergraduate or indeed tutor would be ever sort of complete the pen which actually could release tear gas, something which is an essential part of any sort of spy scenario, really, which is great. And Jessica, what about yourself?
to agree with Robin and Jenny. I think the scene with them opening the cards at the beginning and just talking in the house was probably my favorite scene. I think it could have worked as just a show, like a sitcom almost, just between them, from what I saw at least.
And of course, Diana Rigg, as Emma Peel, very much a trendsetter, and would not have, well, not have been averse to actually wearing her jumpsuits backwards, really, which is a way forward. So it's nice to see that echo has been passed through time and dimensions as well from that point of view, which is great. Of course, we will be looking at other episodes in The Avengers as the thing proceeds. Robin, you've already mentioned the Cybernaut episode, which follows this. There are a number of other key things within that. A sort of final routine. Do you think, Robin, The Avengers works better as a monochrome series? Because clearly this was season 4. We have still many of the Honor Blackman ones there. Thankfully, because of its international sales, we weren't faced with what occurred within the BBC with lots of their particular productions where they effectively just binned them or wiped them or did all sorts of things and were lost forevermore. What do you think, Robin? Prefer in colour or black and white?
For the first series, which was called, I believe, Police Surgeon, have been wiped. There's only about 3 of them available before it actually took its current format, and John Steed was the side character with Ian Hendry as the main character. I would have to watch some colour episodes, which I haven't as yet. I'm now desperate to watch more Avengers.
Then we will work through that.
I'm a big fan of black and white, as you know. I mean, I love my black and white, Twilight Zone, Outer Limits. It adds so much. Lost in Space, the first few episodes, you know, first season. So I'd be interested to see what I think of it in colour, but the episode, particularly the Christmas episode, it definitely benefited for me from being black and white.
As yet, unlike what we're looking at next week, It's a Wonderful Life, there hasn't been a colorized version that's been produced. So an interesting line there in terms of what we should actually do with respect to that. Jessica, it might be worthwhile pointing out, of course, that the thing that Robin was referring to there in terms of the sort of the characterizations and the Avengers and the title The Avengers, of course, actually emerged from David Keel, portrayed by Ian Hendry, who was assisted regularly by this man from the ministry, John Steed, in avenging the death of his wife. Hence the reason that the series effectively was built on a genuine avenging side of things. And I will still go on record as saying that long before the other Avengers came on the screen, which wasn't too far away, basically, in terms of comic book land, etc., it was the late 60s and so on, I was still bemused by the fact that you had all of these American heroes who I thought were just diabolical villains in the comic strip, and no sign of the man with the bowler and his assistant, Emma Peel, or indeed Tara King, which was most bizarre and peculiar, but what the hey. Jenny, final thoughts from yourself. What mark out of 10 are you going to go for the Avengers episode, Too Many Christmas Trees?
I think I'm going to give it 9.
I will also go for 9. It hasn't got a perfect score for me, purely and simply because of that sequence. Why would they leave a perfectly good Bentley there and actually go off in a horse and carriage? I don't know. Unless, of course, you could say that was just a little trot round the particular estate. And of course, they would return to the horse and carriage after they had the mistletoe experience and so on. Or not, as the case may be. So maybe 9.5 for me. Jessica?
I would say probably an 8.5. I really enjoyed it. I would keep watching the series.
I mean, that is something, and again, I can actually vouch, Robin, sort of line that when we go into the Cybernauts and so on, there are even more delights ahead of us in all sorts of ways with karate chops and so on. Sensei. Sensible one, etc. Let's move over to Robin then. What's your score going to be in this almost the penultimate Resonance Rewind of 2020, the year of the plague?
Well, I was so happy with it, I was going to give it full marks, but then there was that fight with Emma Peel and the bad guys. She's tied up. She does this backflip, which knocks the guy out, which is okay, that's interesting, but it didn't explain how she got untied. I mean, by right, she should have dislocated both arms. So that brings it down to a 9 for me.
But still very good. As we said, next week we check out whether it is indeed true that every time a church bell rings, an angel gets its wings, as we explore one of the greats from Frank Capra once again, of course, who we visited last week in terms of Lost Horizon. We'll be taking our journeys off to the delightful world of, again, a place which also in many ways influenced The Simpsons. And we'll find out where some of those things actually emerge in next week's Resonance Rewind. For the moment, Robin Pierce, Jenny, Bill, Jessica, Bertis, and your good self, dear listener, keep on keeping on and keep on resonating.
Bye.
Thank you.